Oh, yeah, I discovered Janis Martin. Like most people, you ask them, have you ever heard of Janis Martin? And they say, who? And that's what happened to me as well. Back in around 1979, I had fallen for this rockabilly band from England called Levi and the Rockettes. And they were the young, sharp-looking tattoos, greasy hair, pompadours, band that were very young. I think they were barely past teenage years. They were so cute, so sexy. And I went and saw them play, and I was knocked out. And I decided that night that I was going to change from country to rockabilly. And I wanted to do that. And the only woman that I had ever heard was Wanda Jackson. I had a cassette tape of hers that a boyfriend had given me. And I didn't really think there were any other women. I didn't even go to look. I was just consumed in my songwriter world or whatever, just trying to make a living playing country, and started my rockabilly band, which I might add in those days was really hard to find other players that could play like that, much less look like that. But I kept going forward anyway. I'd find whatever drummer or guitar player I could. And this is way before I got signed to any kind of record deal. And so I followed Levi and the Rockettes all the way up to San Francisco, and I was hanging out in the audience, and there was a girl next to me, and we started talking. And I said, well, I have a rockabilly band, and I'm from LA. And she goes, really? Well, who do you cover in your band? What songs do you cover? And I said, well, I do some Gene Vincent and some Eddie Cochran and Burnett Brothers. And I said, I do two Wanda Jackson songs. And she said, oh, that sounds cool. She said, do you do any Janis Martin? I said, who? And she said, Janis Martin, the female Elvis, the rockabilly girl? She said, well, if you don't know who Janis Martin is, you don't know anything about rockabilly. And she walked away. And I was like, ooh, it's almost like a slap in the face, you know? And so I went all the way home the next day and drove straight to a record store called Music and Memories. It was a vinyl store that carried a lot of old music from the 50s and before, I believe. And so I went straight up to him and I said, do you have any Janis Martin? He went, oh, sure, that bin over there. I'm like, really? You have it? And I was so excited. And so I picked up a Bear Family reissue. And I took it home. I was so excited to hear it. And I fell in love instantly. And I knew what this girl was talking about. And her songs were so cool. Her voice was so crisp. And my voice is very similar to her. So I could sing everything in her key. I was 29 years old. And, it was really cool. And I started working up her songs. I charted them out and I took them to my rehearsal. And I started having a lot of fun adding her songs to the set, like Barefoot Baby and My Boy Elvis and Bang Bang, the best ones on the record. For all people know, I wrote, they had no idea who Janis Martin was. Still, I was still in the rare group of people that knew who she was. And what happened was through the years, I became friends with Janis. I became friends with Wanda. I sang on a background vocal live show with Wanda. And I just got this idea in my head, and I was like, these girls haven't recorded for over 30 years, and I want to do this record, this concept called Rockabilly Philly. And because that's where people were started to call me that. And I said, I want to do a record. And wouldn't it be cool to bring those girls back and do duets with them on this record? And I started getting really excited. And I contacted both of them, and they both said yes. And that's kind of how all of this thing started. And I realized that I had some power here. I realized that I had record deals. I had a little bit of fame through my Warner Brothers Records days. My country world. I was a country star for like 5 minutes playing the Grand Ole Opry. And I was like, I have the power to bring those girls in the studio. And I really want to, so I will, you know? And so it just dawned on me one day. So I called them both up, and I'm like, let's record. Let's record two songs each. We'll put it on my record, and we'll get you guys back out there again. And they were both gung-ho. And so I got in my little rental car. I had to fly to their cities. You know, I had to go to Danville or Raleigh, Durham, and drive into Danville. Then I flew into Oklahoma City, rented a car, and drove to where Wanda lived. And they both met me, strangely enough, in their Cadillacs. And I got to follow. I was like, I got to get a Cadillac. These girls have Cadillacs. Which I still don't have a Cadillac because I want the pink one, 1959. But I went to their houses, hung out with them, stayed at their houses. They befriended me like their best girlfriend. And we worked on songs and went to the studio and recorded. You know, I had already I brought my 2-inch tape. Everything was digital. Analog. And, of course, it ended up digital when it became a CD. But we did everything as close to the real sound of the 50s recording techniques as we could, tape to tape and everything. And it was just a dream come true. I can't even tell you. I had to keep biting my hand to just like, are you dreaming, you know? The girls were each so cool to me. And so then it became time to go out and promote the CD. And Wanda came with me for 6 weeks. And Janice was busy in her job, so she couldn't get away. And it was when she retired that I finally got her to come into the studio and come into to fly into tech. Well, first I flew to Danville and we figured out which songs we were going to record. I made little demos on my GarageBand and my MacBook and figured out the keys and arrangements, and then I sent them to the guys. And so when I flew her to town, I had picked out a studio in Blanco, Texas, which is about an hour from Austin. And it was a wonderful place. My friends Dennis and Jane owned a little studio there. We brought in extra gear. Brought an engineer in. The guys were all willing to drive an hour every day. We cut it in 3 days and mixed it on the fourth day. There was a wonderful little cabin that Janice and Wayne, her husband, could stay at. And it was the most thrilling 3 days because I watched, and she wasn't feeling well, and we didn't know she was sick, but we knew that she had really bad headaches. And she was like, Rosie, I didn't want to let you down. I had to come anyway. She says, but I feel like crap. And I said, oh, thank you for coming. I said, well, let's just get the music down. We have the musicians. You get better, we can bring you back for vocals. Don't worry about it. You know, if you don't feel like singing, no big deal. And so what happened was the band was so good that it brought this vocal out of her. And you have a copy of it. You know what I'm talking about. She delivered, and the guys were so excited to be around her. She just, it took her, it's kind of like when you're on stage, you forget you feel bad if you do. You know, sometimes you can get well from performing, you know. And I felt like she was not sick while she was recording. She was just felt great, you know. And so we got her back. She came back home. She called me up, and she said, this is the best recording I've ever done. She said, I love this. And it brought tears to my eyes. I was just so happy. And it was so rewarding to have her appreciate what she did and to let her feel this feeling of accomplishment and that knowing that she still had it, what it took to make an amazing record. And I hand a lot of it to the guys in the band because they were well rehearsed and just amazing players at the top of their game, you know. And they didn't overplay. They kept her music, you know. They all knew her music and were fans of hers, especially the drummer Bobby Trimble, who had backed her at many of the shows with his band Big Sandy. They were one of her favorite backing bands. So, you know, they got it. It was one of those just magical moments. I tried to do so much pre-production that I even made these, two-foot tins of pre-made food, that I home-cooked meals that I brought over to the house and kept them in the freezer, so that at the end of the day, those would be put into the oven and we would all sit down and have a meal, so we wouldn't have to go to a restaurant. We could all stay together and, just really well thought out, good vibes all the way around. So we had plenty of food, and there was a little house next to the studio, and we would get the stuff out of the refrigerator, and we'd have lunch and make sandwiches, and we had everything you needed. And I was like, you know what? I'm a pretty darn good producer. I even cook for my people. So I haven't had a chance to get in the studio or take anybody else in, but my next, my fingers are crossed that I can take Wanda and put her in the studio and with the same team and make her, another great record.
But when it came to getting the record out there, you had some trouble with finding a label, yeah?
With Janice Martin, she passed away, sadly, 4 months after we finished that. And, she had showed me a couple of lumps on her back, and I said, you got to get those checked out. And I said, it's probably nothing, but she was very despondent about it. She thought that she might possibly have cancer. And so she was right. She had it, and she went right into chemo. It made her very weak, and I only got to talk to her, maybe 2 or 3 times after the studio, and she became so ill that it wasn't easy for her to talk, and that chemo really knocks you back. And I tried. I've sent out, to 10 different labels. I spent a whole lot more, because I had paid for this all by myself through the money that I had gotten after my mom passed away and they sold the house. And I just figured, oh, I'll get that back in a second. This is so good. I didn't realize how much trouble I was going to have. And all the letters came back, this is great, but we don't know how we're going to promote it. And then I would give them a whole layout on, I have friends like Kim Lenz and Mark T. Brom that will help me promote this. I plan on doing T-shirts. I plan on doing, a big screen like you saw at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. We're going to tell her story, and we're going to do these songs, and basically tell her whole life story. And nobody wanted to take a chance. I came very close with a label in England, RCA or BMG, Sony, that came very close to doing it. And then I came really close to an American label, CMH. And after being led down that almost road twice, I was pushed to just be at the end of my line, which was start raising money. I was going to go to Australia and make a bunch of money. I'll just put it out myself. I'll just keep investing in this. And just in the nick of time, my friend said, hey, there's this thing called Kickstarter. Why don't you do that? I'm sure you can get the money. I said, really? And I looked on the site, and I'm like, you know what? After talking to a few people that have had successful, times with getting their music out and books and films on Kickstarter, why not? What have I got to lose? So I did it, and I raised $15,000, and I was able to start paying the musicians for the work they had done. They hadn't been paid. I never have ever paid myself back, because as it were, it ended up costing another almost $9,000-$10,000 on top of that. It's not easy to do a record, and I had to do all the T-shirts and the scrapbooks and the flying, and I painted. In fact, that's this painting over here is one of the paintings I did. I did 3 paintings. For Alec Whiteman was one of the board of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. He was one of the bigger contributors, and so I realized that this is a lot of work, and it was very tearful, because I was under a lot of pressure. And after I'd raised the money, I actually broke my arm and I couldn't work, and it took me a couple of years to actually get it out, as because you were a contributor, but I didn't want to do it cheaply. I want it to be done in a way that would honor her, and I want it to be, I wanted it to be a classic CD that would go down, and vinyl. We put it out in pink vinyl too. I wanted this to be a classic for the rest of time, you know, to give her that, you know. And so I did it, and I'm on the other side of it, and we're still promoting it. In fact, I'm going to be at Hemsby, the Rockabilly Festival, in October in England, and going to be doing a full-on Janis Martin tribute. And I'm working with Marty Brom. We're going to be in Wisconsin and Chicago. And, you know, whenever we can, when everybody wants to, you know, book us, we're doing that show. So that's basically the story of how she came and went in my life.
Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.